Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
In Indianapolis, where the Nittany Lion basketball team plays in the opening round of the Big Ten tournament tonight, 8:30 the tip, 8 o'clock the airtime. So switching places here in Indianapolis with the guy who was in Indy last week, and that is Peter King, NBC Sports Football Morning in America. Peter, welcome back. It's so great to hear you.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Good to be with you. Where are you now? Are you at the arena, or are you back in your hotel?
I'm at the Omni. So.
Oh, you're at the Omni Severin. Right, yep. Where there's a lot of stuff that happens there at the combine. A lot of a lot of the agents set up shop over there because they have really good meeting rooms, ballrooms, and stuff that they can do. They can bring all their players into. So, anyway, the whole city's convenient. It's a great place.
I thought that was a great point you made in the article because, I mean, obviously between football and basketball, I've done a lot here. Just like you've done a lot here along the way. You made a great point that I don't understand why more places don't design their center city like this.
Yeah, yeah. That's the point that I wrote that I will predict that if I think the Combine will be back in Indianapolis next year for one more year, and then I think that the NFL is going to start moving it around or just move it like to Dallas or L.A. for a lot of money. But I think what's going to happen is that if that happens, there will be a bunch of coaches who won't go. Because as it is right now, I kind of use this as an example. I had lunch on Friday last week with Mickey Loomis, the GM of the Saints, and we were going to meet at 12:15 at the Conrad Hotel. There's a little restaurant, the Cap Grill, in just off the lobby. So we're going to meet at 12:15, and he writes to me, and he says, hey, running a little bit late, be there as soon as I can. And he comes in, he's kind of like 12:22. He's almost a little bit out of breath. He really hustled. So he was over at the in some of the rooms watching in the convention center, watching guys lift weights. And, you know, he just wanted to wait to see the last couple of guys, and so he hustled over there. And just think, that's like probably a 10-minute walk max,
right,
from where they were having the bench presses to the hotel that is kind of furthest away there at the Conrad. And it's just, people don't realize how important the proximity is there. And so, but I really do think that a bunch of coaches won't show if it ends up being a commuter combine.
Right. Because I think what you stay at the J-Dub, right? That's where you stay.
Yeah.
The Marriott, yeah.
It's a good spot, yeah.
Yeah, it is a good spot. I've stayed there for football before. So I want to ask, you did a large section on Aiden Hutchinson. And obviously, in 19, he played against Penn State. In 20, though, out there, he did not. And I thought it made a difference in the game, and that Penn State won out in Ann Arbor. This year, he played at Beaver Stadium, and it was a huge difference. He made one play after another. What is it about him that others are telling you that makes him a potential difference maker at the next level?
That, I saw a play that Aaron Donald made in the Super Bowl where he pushed the Bengals right guard back 7 yards, and Aaron Donald and the right guard sacked Joe Burrow. And I'm serious. If you watch the replay of the play, it was 3rd and 8 from the 11, I think, in the third quarter, and it is just totally embarrassing for the Bengals.
Yeah.
So I think I saw Aiden Hutchinson make almost the exact same play against the Ohio State left tackle in their game where he just pushed him back into the quarterback and sacked him. And but I think he has, I am no fan of all the, hey, wow, he ran a 6.763 cone or what, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, he was only bested of all the people who did that three-cone drill, which honestly measures quickness and change of direction. Only four people in the entire combine beat him in that. And so, I mean, there's a lot of corners. There's a lot of wide receivers. There's a lot, you know, and here he is, this big kind of buff, you know, put together edge player. And so the point, my point is, I think most people in the NFL think he's a good combo platter of a guy who can rush with power and who also can make people miss when he runs outside, or even you know, moves inside and tries to just split that gap between the tackle and the guard. So I think most people think he's versatile. Now, look, we'll see. 30.5 tackles behind the line of scrimmage in the Big Ten is great. What does that mean in the NFL? We'll see.
Yeah, we'll find out. I mean, that's exactly right, because I remember a while ago when Bill O'Brien was the coach here at Penn State, and I was talking to him about the jump. And he said, Steve, he says, from high school to college is a really big jump. He said, this was his opinion, his words. He said, from college to the pros is a chasm.
Yeah, then, that's really interesting. So I think, I think that there are some guys, I think there are some people like this corner from Cincinnati, Sauce Gardner, who did not allow a touchdown in 1,100 snaps playing at the University of Cincinnati. That's a really, really impressive thing. However, you know, the University of Cincinnati is not playing an SEC schedule, and I'm not dogging the guy at all. I think he's a fascinating prospect, you know, especially because he's whatever he is, 6'2". But, you know, look, I said this to Joe Burrow's father the week before, almost 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. I made this point to him, like, you know, in some ways, you know, I think your son was fortunate that Ohio State sent him packing, because he got to play against better secondaries, I think significantly better secondaries in the ACC, especially, you know, a place like Alabama. You know, he got to play against really great fronts like in Alabama and Georgia. And you know, plus he got to play with Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, he was basically, that last year, 2019, he was in the NFL, you know.
Yeah.
And
right, exactly.
In some ways, I think a guy like Burrow was fortunate and entered the NFL a little bit readier than if he had been the quarterback at Ohio State.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And the other element, too, is that Urban was not going to pass Joe Burrow over JT Barrett, who was a fine college quarterback,
right?
But played the way Urban wanted to play.
And also,
right?
And Burrow, Steve, remember, in that last year, he was, you know, Dwayne Haskins won the job over him.
Exactly.
And what makes this ironic, and look, Jimmy Burrow is a college football coach. You know, his last decade before he retired 2 years ago, He was the defensive coordinator at Ohio University under Frank Solich. And so he knows coaching, and he understands that hard decisions can be made. And I think he obviously feels like his son should have beaten out Haskins and all that, but he's not one of those guys that said, boy, Urban Meyer, what a jerk, because he understands the business, you know. But I do think that the Jimmy Burrow, even though it was kind of a heartbreak for the family, they lived in Ohio for a long time, went to school in Athens, a smaller high school, and was Mr. Football in Ohio, and the pinnacle would have been for him to play at Ohio State, and it just didn't work out. And I have since come to find, by the way, that Urban Meyer had to be almost had to be overly convinced to take Joe Burrow and give him a full ride, you know, when he went there, that he really didn't have any interest. He thought the level of competition was just too significant,
right.
You know, the difference in the level of competition. But, hey, you know, what's interesting is that everything looks great in hindsight, and I think it's hard to think you're always going to be right when you're making judgments on 18- and 19-year-old kids.
And by the way, Urban Meyer did not go 0-12 with his decisions either. Let's remember. So they weren't that bad of decisions. But
right,
Joe Burrow did put down 2 years of you know, a very good junior year. Not great, but very good. And then his last year, obviously, off the charts. So he had 2 years of tape he put down.
Yeah.
Dwayne Haskins only put down one, and Mitchell Trubisky only put down one. What kind of factor do you think in moving forward about limited tape versus extensive tape on decision making?
Well, I know that last year there were a lot of people wondering. You know, now when you look at any quarterback in the draft, you want, as Parcells used to call it, pelts on the wall. You want a bunch of starts. You want a lot of experience. And I think I'm correct in saying Aiden Hutchinson started 38 games at Michigan. Or 39 games, excuse me, at Michigan.
Yes.
Like, that is significant. You know, and I forget, I'm trying to remember now, the Ravens, when they were drafting a couple of years ago, they drafted an offensive lineman in the middle rounds who had started 52 games in college. And I remember Eric DaCosta, the GM, basically saying, hey, listen, you start 52 games, it means a lot of things. It means, especially at a high, you know, in a high-level conference, said it means that you showed up right away and you started playing, mostly, and also that you don't get hurt very much. And so I think more and more people who scout, especially that quarterback position, they want to see more games than just one season.
Exactly. I haven't gotten to the Russell Wilson part yet or Carson Wentz. Just your thoughts on Denver, Seattle, which also released Bobby Wagner, and then what Washington and Indianapolis you think are both trying to do here.
Well, this is interesting. Last year, remember that basically the Rams made that ridiculous blockbuster trade involving Stafford and Goff on January 29th. And so everybody kind of got spoiled. Well, when's the action really going to start happening? And the fact that basically it didn't happen until two of them happened March 8th and one of them happened March 9th, three moves, Rodgers staying, and then obviously the Russell Wilson trade, and today the Carson Wentz trade. And I really think what happened is that, you know, especially with Russell Wilson, that was not going to last. It just wasn't. The Seahawks were never going to sign him to a new contract that was going to hopscotch and jump over Patrick Mahomes. They weren't paying him $48-50 million. They just weren't ever going to do it. And honestly, for the last 13 months, either him or his agent has been making noise about wanting to go. And so finally, I think they just said, okay, enough. You know, we know for some reason you're probably not happy here. We're not happy that you're not happy, and we don't want our franchise player rolling his eyes and thinking, well, okay, if I have to stay, I will. We want somebody who wants to lead this team into the next decade. And so it's a ridiculous coincidence that he and Bobby Wagner both go basically on the same day, but that's what happened. You know, arguably, other than Steve Largent, okay, arguably, and maybe Cortez Kennedy, but who knows? But maybe the two of the three or four best players in franchise history, you know, leave the franchise in the same day. And that was a big deal. But as far as, and they just want to start over. They want to start over. Now, they may start over with Deshaun Watson. I don't know. Nobody knows, because nobody knows what his legal situation is going to be. And we're going to start knowing that when the grand jury interviews some of the complainants in the Deshaun Watson case starting on Friday in Houston. But anyway, that's an X factor with Seattle that we just don't know what's going to happen. But at least Seattle now has the ammo to trade for Deshaun Watson if they want to. As far as Denver goes, it was six consecutive post-Peyton Manning years that the quarterbacking stunk. 10 different starting quarterbacks, more than any team in the league, and there wasn't one of them that anybody ever felt, including Drew Lock, that anybody ever felt, well, this is going to be our guy. You know, it was always hoping and a wing and a prayer, and let's throw Trevor Siemian out there, and let's see if Joe Flacco's got a tiny bit of production left in his arm. And, you know, it just was never right. And it's surprising, Steve, because John Elway made a lot of those decisions. And right. Shouldn't he know what a quarterback is? But
yes.
But be all that as it may, Denver, I don't care if they trade five ones. You cannot win in the NFL without a quarterback. They saw that for six consecutive years, and it wouldn't matter how much they paid for Russell Wilson. They had to have a quarterback.
Agree with that. Any thoughts on Wentz going to Washington? Because, I mean, that also means that Indianapolis has to make a decision.
Well, you know, I hate to spread ill off-the-record stuff from coaches and people in the league about a player.
Right,
but,
fair.
Man, I heard a lot of it last week about Carson Wentz. A lot. From people who had worked with him and been around him. And I think, you know what I think one of his biggest issues is, honestly, you know, and everybody said, well, you know, he didn't get the COVID shot. And, you know, he missed a game and all that, and that's bad. And, of course, it's bad. You can overcome that. You just can. You know, he easily could have overcome it if in the last two games of this season, against the Raiders at home or at woeful Jacksonville, he had played a big-time game, and he didn't in either game. He was especially bad at Jacksonville with everything on the line. And I think a lot of people who have worked with him believe that he is going to do what he wants to when he snaps the ball. He's not necessarily going to look at his second, third, and fourth option. He's going to lock on guys, throw it, even when they're not altogether open. And I think that began to tick off people. I know it began to tick off people in Philadelphia. He got benched there. Steve, what's absolutely amazing is, I think I'm right in saying this, but at the end of this year, Carson Wentz will have earned something like $106 million in the NFL. And at the end of this year, he might not have a home again, and he might end up being just a career backup. He might end up being Colt McCoy. I mean, it's just really sad what has happened to this guy. And the other thing is, this is the other part of his story. I will always think, when you walk outside of Lincoln Financial Field and you see the statue of Nick Foles and Philly Special, okay? Mm-hmm. I just will always believe that Carson Wentz thinks that should be my statue. There should be a statue of me. That should have been my Super Bowl. And I think it was hard for him to accept that he got hurt on his way to an MVP season, and I don't think he ever let it go.
I can understand you saying that. I know you put in a ton of hours here last week, and so I'm going to give you – and you gave us a lot of time today. Peter, thanks so much for the time. Get a little bit of rest, because it's obviously another busy time of the year.
Hey, thanks a million, Steve. Hey, good luck to the Lions tonight.
I appreciate that, Peter. Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye.